Well, welcome, if I may, to February 2020. Cut off the music a little too soon there. Sorry about that. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and today we're going to spend some time with two outstanding educators, Carol Purovan-Hoffer and Kimberly Johnson. Carol from Indiana, Kimberly from Alabama, and both of them are Horace Mann Award winners for teaching excellence, an award given by the wonderful NEA Foundation. These are two of the five public school educators from across the nation who received this incredible honor. Again, the NEA Foundation's 2024 Horace Mann Award for Teaching Excellence. And it's a really high honor. So we're going to talk to them about their philosophy of teaching, what's going on in their classroom, et cetera. It's a beautiful mix across the country, from the South to the Midwest, Alabama to Indiana. And we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, where our magazine, Equity in Access, is. And we're honoring the Equity Award winners in this particular issue that's up there right now. It's our online journal. And by the way, everything's free over there at ace-ed.org. All our podcasts are there, as well as a ton of information. So please check it on out, ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on my two wonderful guests. I'll say good morning, Kimberly, first. How are you, Kimberly? How's the weather in Auburn?
Good morning. It is good today. The sun is out. The skies are blue. It's around 40 degrees. We're supposed to get up to 61 today, so
Wow. It's
pretty good down here.
Well, I'm jealous. I live in Maine. Okay, 61
in
summer. We're snow covered, but that's okay. We know that we live here. And one last question before I get back to you and say good morning to Carol. Is there any? I understand there's a small college in Auburn. Did you go there?
It's a little, yeah.
I've heard of
Auburn
small
University.
College struggling in football.
Yes, this is very much a college town, and we are in the middle of basketball season. And, we're doing pretty well right now. I have one of my degrees from Auburn University. My first one was from the University of Alabama, so I'd like to say roll tide. And then I went to and then I got my master's degree from Alabama A&M University, which is an HBCU in our state.
Yep, yep.
And then I got the next one from Auburn. And so I've done it all.
But you're doing the circuit. Okay.
Yes.
And, by the way, do not say that out loud. Roll Tide in Alabama, in Auburn. Be very careful. Be very careful.
I know. I make a lot of people mad.
I'm always kidding. Anytime I do work with somebody from Alabama, I always say, and now the most important question, Alabama or Auburn. And it's always a good laugh when we do it. So it's great. It's terrific.
Well, it's both, but Alabama
it is both.
Alabama
You're forgiven.
Second.
You're forgiven.
Yes.
And the good work you've done with the children of Auburn forgives you 100%. So no problem.
Yes. Thank you.
Carol, good morning. It's Larry here.
Good morning. Hi, Larry. Hi, Kimberly. It's so great to be with all of you. It's an honor.
It's an honor to have you here.
Good
I
got
to tell you. And Carol, I just want to just read your background here, and I love your background. Carol Purovan-Hoffer is our guest, and is a Peruvian. She's a Peruvian-American. I love this. Grew up outside the U.S., Brazil. You bring up a global perspective. Brazil, Mexico, Peru, of course, the United States. Been teaching for 31 years. 31 years. Okay? And that makes you sound so old, doesn't it? 31 years, for goodness sakes. From preschool to adult education. I love it. And you're certified. So, wow, you're something. I got to tell you, Carol.
Yeah, and Kimberly's board certified, too. So we'll have to talk a little bit about that.
Thank you, Kimberly.
As well.
Congratulations on that. That's
yes,
a big deal.
Thank you.
It is a big deal. And I always say it this way. You know how you go into a doctor's office and they have all those certificates? They go into all these clinics. They go to all these schools. Okay, teachers don't put those up usually. Okay, but being a board certified teacher is really, really hard to get and really something. So I congratulate both of you on that. Thank you for telling me that, Carol. I didn't have that note here.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, it's very cool stuff and really amazing. And you've taught Carol, you've taught people from age 3 to 83, and you're an ESL teacher, basically, right?
Yes.
At five, that's my wife was an ESL teacher for years. Okay, at Fox Hill Elementary School in Indianapolis. Just brag about your school, then I'm going to let Kimberly do the same thing. Okay, so brag about Fox Hill. Go ahead.
We're a very diverse school. We have 16 different home languages represented.
Wow.
And our diversity keeps growing. Our newest wave of students are Haitian. We've had these very different waves that come in and just change the perspective a little bit. We've had Burmese students, and we had a wave of students from the Democratic Republic of Congo. So newest ones are Haitian. But what is really interesting, a lot of the families are coming not directly, some are coming directly from Haiti, but some of them are coming from third countries. So I actually we have a couple students who were born in Brazil, one that was born in Chile. So it's really, for me, it's interesting when I'm talking to the parents, it's like, okay, I don't speak Haitian Creole, but I do speak French. Spanish and Portuguese.
Wow.
So some of them, like I was communicating with one mom in, I was on WhatsApp with her in French, and lo and behold, somebody says, can you talk to this mom? The language that they're showing is Portuguese. And then I WhatsApped the mom. I said, do you want me to communicate in French or in Portuguese? She's like, no, I prefer Portuguese. And so we're kind of going back and forth. But she was understanding me when I was sending the messages in French. And then lo and behold, it's like when you really get to know the families and what their background is and what the richness that they bring, to our students and to our community is just amazing.
That's really a great point. And that's the whole point of diversity, the richness they bring to a community. People don't understand that. Okay, I shouldn't say it that way, but a lot of people don't understand that. All right, that's the beauty of it. It's not a challenge. We should take advantage of it. Okay, it's something they're bringing to the party, and it's really, really cool. And Fox Hill sounds like a really good place. They have a great ESL teacher who really understands the needs for all this. Again, an amazing background. Kimberly, to brag a little bit about Auburn Junior High. And by the way, I have to say something. You're at Auburn Junior High, right?
Yes.
I got to say something. It's so rare these days that I hear the term junior high. I taught at a junior high. Okay. Most of the beginning, they say changed it now to middle school. Okay. So it's good. I got a big smile on my face when I see Auburn Junior High School. Okay? It reminds me of the good old days. Okay? Tell us about your school.
Yeah. Well, I teach at Auburn Junior High, and I like to say that Auburn is a big little town. We really pride ourselves in the community that we've built around the university and the town. But we are a one high school town, but we are the second fastest growing city in the state of Alabama. And so my school serves 1,500 eighth and ninth grade students.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot.
Yes. And so speaking to diversity, I think about that. I feel like we're a bubble in the middle of our state just because of the higher education institution here, the people who have always lived here, and our international student population because of the university. And so we have a Kia plant. We're right on the Georgia line.
Oh.
Probably 20 to 30 minutes. We're 30 minutes away from Columbus, Georgia. The next city over is actually on a different time zone because of that. So we're right on the Georgia line. And so we have a Kia plant nearby. And so we have a really high population of Korean students in our school as well, and a really high population of diverse students. More of a suburban setting, but we have students from all demographics. We're about 50% majority, 40% minority population. So pretty well balanced, but it's about the same with economic differences with our students as well. As far as
you know, what's interesting, when you said you have a Kia plant there, then you said you have a lot of Korean kids. That surprised me because I would think management would be very small number of, from the company, in from corporate. And then the rest of it would be, you know, the people who build the cars, it would be mostly, if I may, American. But you're saying there's a large Korean population that came with the plant. I think that's really cool.
Yes, yes. And the families are usually here for 3 or 4 years, and so those families are really, you know, just looking for good schools, very supportive.
Yeah.
The support with the university, college students, interns, lab students, just I feel like we are a special place, honestly. And I love what I do. I've been teaching at Auburn Junior High School for 20 years this year. So.
Wow. You are listed on my notes as an interventionist and resource teacher. What does that mean?
Well, I'm by degree and by certification, I'm an English language arts teacher. And what I found is that when you are in schools who may be middle class, mostly middle class, and you have students who are from diverse populations or high poverty, sometimes the kids get missed. And when you have 1,500 kids, you know, you just kind of get caught up in the mix. And so I kind of found a niche to where I was able to support students and pull students on my planning period to just give them a little extra support, work with their teachers. I feel like my superpower is relationship building. And so being able to build relationships with the students and the parents. And so then my group got bigger and bigger and more teachers just wanted to tap into what I was doing. And so I moved from the regular English language arts classroom to what we call the study skills class. So basically it was students who were not special education, but who were struggling in some sort of way, whether it was organization or just having extra time or extra support. And so it just kind of morphed into this thing where I just support students who are in the middle, not special education, but might be struggling in the regular classroom some. And so I intervene. I do math and reading interventions, but mostly I work with students one-on-one just to support them and get them whatever they need to be successful or as successful as they can be in the classroom.
That's just wonderful, okay? And I'm glad the school saw this. I congratulate the administration for seeing the need and allowing you to do that, okay?
Right.
That is
autonomy
so key.
Was big.
Yeah. You know, it's hard these days and to do that. And I was just reading an article New York Times this morning, which happened to be about where I live, Maine, was about the need for intervention for kids, okay? And it was so important, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the fact that you're doing it down there at Auburn Junior High is just absolutely amazing, and I hope that other schools in the area look at you and say, can we continue this for those same kids? I hope they continue it in senior high, okay? Those kids just don't break off at junior high and all of a sudden they're fine. Okay, they need help all the way through, and we want them to be good citizens. We want them to be good workers. Okay,
yes.
So you know it's really important. I hope that the school district, I'm sure they do now that you have won the First Man Award. Okay, recognizes your good work and how important it is, and I hope they honored you and Carol, by the way, at Fox Hill appropriately for the work that you guys do. It's you should be very, very proud of yourselves, and I know your profession is proud of you, okay? And that's stuff, so congrats again to both of you. I want to ask you something. You've both been teaching, and I don't mean to age you, but you've both been teaching a long time, okay? Kimberly, 26 years, and what was it for? It was 31 years, amazingly, for Carol, okay? And I'll go back to Carol. Carol, you've both been teaching a long time, okay? Everybody knows we had the pandemic, and it was different in every state, but generally now across the board, things are a little different, okay? And I'm just curious, when you go into your classroom now, what do you see now that you didn't see before? That you have to, and again, you two bring excellent teaching philosophies and practice to the classroom, okay? What are you seeing now that's different from when, let's say, when you started and over the course of time. Carol.
Well, my grandmother had a wonderful saying, a cada fruta su estación, which means every fruit has its season. So there are things that are that maybe, because a lot of times we focus on like what is wrong, right? We tend to we revise history and we're like, oh, things were so much wonderful back then and what have you.
So there are
pros and cons to everything.
Right.
One thing I would say is the fact I feel that there is way more testing going on. Right now I am entering the testing season, I call it, because my ENL kids right now, they have to take their WIDA test to see where they are with their English proficiency. And then we're moving into, all the state testing and then all the in-school testing and what have you. So there's more increase in testing. I think also in terms of trying to standardize everything, there's a little bit less teacher creativity, maybe the time-wise that is allowed, because there's a big thing of like, this is research-based. And sometimes I kind of have a quarrel with that. It's kind of like when they used to stick the, no trans fat, this is kind of, when they put labels on things. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that that's the point, but it's kind of like a radar. Everybody is up on that. But the pluses are, for me, like the fact that we have all this technology available.
Right.
So, for example, when I'm working with my students if we come across the word, say, tumbleweed, I can just go to Google Images and boom, there's a, I don't have to go and search, go to some dusty book and try to find a picture of a tumbleweed or something like that. There's a lot of different ways to help translate so that, a teacher that doesn't speak the student's language, they can kind of, there's a lot more ways to kind of build up our students' English in different sort of ways. So, and then just the whole global perspective that I can also, collaborate with colleagues, not only here, but, throughout the country and outside of the country.
Yes, you can.
As well. And it's just like, we just, connect, the connectivity of people is just wonderful. So, things, are they better? Are they worse? No, they're just different.
well said. I have to say a couple of things about what you just said, which I thought was very, very clever. Okay. Again, teaching 31 years. Okay, there's a tremendous difference in the use of technology. And to be able to use that, okay, like you're using it, is extremely important. Technology, it does create some challenges, okay? But if you use it properly, it's the best tool in education since they invented chalk, okay? And that's all it is a tool, okay? And clever teachers use it properly, and before you know it, you've got something really, really, really well going. And the other thing you said about testing, okay, and they're measuring everything. And in reality, we are a data-driven society, but I have to tell you, a lot of teaching, in my opinion, is anecdotal. You're with the kids all the time. You know what they need. You know what they're looking for. You know what they sound like, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, and we got to pay a lot more attention. I think that's a very important point to what teachers are saying, especially excellent teachers like you guys are. Okay, and I thought that was very, very, very important. I love the tumbleweed example. Suddenly you can show it to a kid and they go, oh, yeah. And the other thing I want to ask you, Carol, you're an ESL teacher, if I may, okay, but the kids go to other teachers as well, okay, and certainly they're going to go on to middle school, junior high school, and those teachers, okay, have expectations. All right. Are you finding over the course of the last 30 years, I'll say, as you've been teaching, okay, that as your community becomes more diverse, the teaching and the education school has also been able to understand that and move forward with the times, using the technology like you're using as one good example. I'm just curious how the ESL kids and ESL students are doing, okay, with all the other teachers? What are you finding? Carol.
It varies from person to person. A lot of times what I say, you know, because people say about somebody being, say, international-minded, being international-minded is not about how much where somebody has been or where has somebody traveled or anything like that. It's just like being it basically means being an open-minded person, being curious, mm-hmm. wanting to know. I love those teachers who will have, you know, maps out in their classrooms, who really explore the diversity and try to cater to who their students are, individuality of them. And it's a lot what Kimberly was saying, right, is building those relationships and just looking at what the student brings. And so a lot of times what happens is when the English speaker student is learning another language, we look at that as an asset. But yet when we have our ESL kid who's coming with another language and is not maybe hasn't reached that proficiency in English,
that's a detriment.
We look at
that's
as a deficit. Yeah. And
well
so what
said.
You know, like a lot of times I tell my parents is you need to continue building that language at home. You want your child to be bilingual. It may take them longer
Absolutely.
To get the two together, but I always say it's like when you're making a double batch of Jell-O, it's going to take longer for that batch to gel, but you're gonna get double the amount in the long run. So it's worth it.
Yeah, you know, you just reminded me, I haven't thought about Jell-O in a long time, and you just reminded me when I was a kid in elementary school, if we had string beans for lunch on Monday, anything that was left over was now suspended in the Jell-O for dessert on Tuesday at school. they were like science fiction string beans suspended in the Jell-O. Yeah, you just reminded me of that. I got this picture in my head as you said that, but a double batch. And, you know, your point is, well, we got to take advantage. I don't mean it that way, but I'm going to say it. We got to take advantage of these kids and the cultures and language they bring to the party.
Yeah.
And sometimes we forget that. Oh, well, let's just teach them English and get them more American. And we got to make sure the other kids all understand they bring something to the party too. Peru, Brazil, wherever you want to go in the world, Korea, they all bring something great to the party. Okay? And we got to learn that. And if the kids understand that, they're going to be more global. They're going to be more global. Okay, it's just a better planet when we do that. Well said, Carol. I got to tell you. Okay, you're really something. Kimberly, okay, what is it, 28, 26 years? I don't want to age you. 26 years. Congratulations. Okay.
Thank you.
And it's amazing because you're only 32 years old. I don't know how you did
it, but
congratulations.
I know. I don't know
how
That's
great. I did it. Yeah, I don't know either. Okay, it started when you were 6 years old. Unbelievable. Okay. Okay, I want to – what's changed? Okay, and I think things – well, what you were telling me, things have changed, but I'm not surprised for the better. What's changed over the 28 years that you're reacting to, that you have to work in, that you see with the kids? Go ahead.
Mostly for me, just in the classroom with individual students, is that I see that, especially since the pandemic, so I'm just going to talk about the last 5 years.
Please
is,
do.
Stamina for students and teachers.
Wow.
Just
good word.
Thank you. And just the ability to stay engaged, be engaged, move forward, push ourselves. I feel like that on top of the chronic absenteeism that we've been seeing in the past few years has been not detrimental, but it has been a big hurdle, I think, seeing just individual students. Like, even pre-pandemic, because I work with 8th and 9th graders, like, the students who were coming to school, and then we had those months out, and then we came back, and then it was hard to get parents and teachers in sync, I think. We kind of went some steps back, I think, as far as just being able to stay the course with even attention spans. And so, and with that, I've seen over the last 26 years, just a really more students, an increase in, I guess, mental wellness, lots of anxiety, Lots of students wanting to disengage, and I call them bubbles, to get in their bubbles. And so I spend a lot more time with the social-emotional part of trying to get students to have conversations and dialogue and interact with each other. Because going back to what Carol was saying, you know, we are a global society. We do have to interact and reach out. And I've seen students with more withdrawn or get more withdrawn over the past few years. But on top of that, the growth piece is that I feel like teachers have gotten more autonomy, and we've gotten the ability to meet more students where they are because of the way special education has moved to inclusion in classes and to students being more engaged and more heterogeneous grouping and the hiring of more ELL teachers and just being able to differentiate and meet individual needs. I feel like that's grown tremendously over the last 26 years, and I can appreciate that because that means we're looking at these individual students and we are at least thinking about what they may need to be successful. And so I feel like in the beginning, like even with students who would get in trouble or with classroom management, there was more of a disrespectful defiance that I was seeing students in the 90s and early 2000s, where now I feel like it's quiet defiance. And I'm just going to not engage. I'm just going to not pay attention. I'm going to – what looks like a student is not motivated. And so I think we just really need to pay close attention to cultural awareness, cultural competence, just all of those things to know how to reach our students.
That's all about equity. It all boils down to equity. Just give a kid what they particularly need. Okay, I'm not talking about equality. I'm talking about equity, okay, that every kid learns differently. All right, and that we have to give them what they need. And that chronic absenteeism these days, okay, is just, you read about it, you know, and you know, I certainly talk to people about it, and you just can't believe what it's like, all right? And what do you attribute? I have to ask the disengagement of kids. Was it the pandemic that just allowed, oh, well, stay home, this is better than going to school? Is it social media that, oh, this is where my life really is? What do you think it is that's causing the disengagement? Because teachers I talk to are as good and loyal and you know, caring as ever, all right? And everybody's trying to get all this technology that allows kids to learn at their own speed and all that sort of thing, going on and on about that, okay? And what do you think is causing the disengagement these days, just as you talk to the kids?
And I guess I am dating myself because I am going to say, whereas technology can be a wonderful tool, it is a way of escapism as well for these students. And I feel like if they can just shut things off, especially if they are troubled in other ways, it is just a way to escape. And so I feel like it's that.
Yeah, good point.
I think it's the access, you know, that we can just turn on our phones and there's the internet. Whether the school is providing the Wi-Fi or not, kids will figure out a way to connect. And I think just the screen time, I feel like screen time, social media, just they want to be entertained and they want to entertain themselves. And so if I'm talking about the parts of a cell in class, that's not nearly as engaging as this TikTok I saw last night on TV. And I'm in on my phone and I wanted to share with my friends. And so I think it's how we engage them because the students are different than they were. Like, cell phones didn't exist when I was in school. And so you have to be able to find those tools and figure out a way to bring the students in. And I feel like the young teachers that I am seeing really are tapped into that with how they bring their lessons and how they engage students. But we still have students who just want to not. Like, I'd rather not. And I feel like with the pandemic, because school was virtual or hybrid, and we had those days that we didn't have to show up, I feel like some of the parents are like, oh, well, you don't have to go today. And so I don't think we're pushing it like we were. And the fact that there are probably more parents who work from home. And so babysitting is not necessarily the issue. Like, I have to go to work, so you have to go to school. I used to hear that when I was younger. But now, oh, you want to stay home? Oh, you don't feel good? I feel like kids are being allowed to have more ownership in that. But I think that has led to it because we went those months where you didn't have to show up to the schoolhouse.
Right, and it just created a bad habit. And
right.
we got to change that, I think, okay, and make kids go to school. You know, all that, what you said, okay, brings me to another question. You know, you are both public school teachers. And as you know, in many parts of the country, in many communities everywhere, I should tell you everywhere, okay, schools are under attack. I'm going to say it that way. Okay, and now it's fine for people to question what a school board and a school is doing. That's what a public school is. Okay, it is based on the needs of the public, but sometimes that can go too far and overreach. Okay, people are always attacking public schools for some reason. And you know, are you seeing that? I'll stay with Kimberly on this one. Where do you see public education going? Where do you see the future of teachers going? Okay, it's a tough question. Okay, you want to give that one a shot, Kimberly?
I will, and I want to start out on just a positive note. Like,
please do.
The commitment and the efforts I have seen of people trying to build retention and recruitment programs, the roundtables that I've been able to sit with principals, and I had the opportunity to sit at a round table with the Secretary of Education and talk about what is going on with teachers. But I see a commitment. I see people trying to build minority teacher pipelines. I see people recruiting and doing fellowships and doing such wonderful things to bring young teachers to the classroom that I think we will be fine. What I do think is that education has become a political topic when it has more so right now than it has ever been. But with that being said, I think the people, those of us who have children, all of us, no matter what side you're on, want what's best for our kids.
That's right.
And we want autonomy and we want to decide. And I just think about, we have to think about what we all have in common first, which is what's best for our kids. And then we have to think out from there. And we have to sit down and have really hard conversations. Because I don't think what we're teaching in school is necessarily about beliefs, but people who want to keep things divided, bring that in to stir the pot, if that makes sense. Because
it makes like, perfect sense, and you said something that's very important. If you really look at it, we all, I don't care where we are, we all have more in common, okay, than we think. Mm-hmm. Far more, probably 98-95% in common, okay. And we sometimes forget that for the pushiness, if I may, of the 5%. Okay, and to find the in common thing, we all want what's best for the kids. Okay, and we got to leave that to being positive about it all. What do you think, Carol? You're in Indianapolis. What do you think? Okay, you look at
the
future of education. Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
To follow what Kimberly's train of thought, it reminded me of one of Maya Angelou's poems where she says, "We are more alike, my friends, than unalike."
Absolutely.
Because we do have more in common. It's really interesting. A couple of things came to mind. One, I just recently was listening to a podcast from in New York City, where my daughter lives in Brooklyn, so I follow a lot of things that happen in New York. But they were talking about they did an article where a lot of families are staying in one bedroom apartments, even though they have kids, you know, like they'll have three kids or whatever. And the number one reason was they don't want to leave their school system. They love their school.
Oh, wow.
So what you'll find is that, you will find that people, you know, you may hear this overall kind of grumbling about public schools, but when it comes down to it, people love their school.
That's right.
You know, their own specific school. And then,
it's everybody else's
when
school
they're talking
that's banned.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's this weird kind of, the school that I know is good, but these other schools, these rumors, these things that I hear about, things are not going well. And the other point, too, what was really interesting, we had a round table where our superintendents of public instruction, the former ones, this was a couple years ago, because now in Indiana we can no longer vote for that position. They have taken that away from us.
Oh.
It's now appointed.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyways, there was this roundtable, and it was bipartisan, by the way, of superintendents of public instruction, the former ones. But what they said was, follow the money. There was this line of, so when you see this tear down of the public school, when you see, you know, the voucher system or going into different types of schooling, a lot of it is that pot of money of education.
That's
where
right.
is that going? Who wants to put their hands in the till, if you will? And so
absolutely right.
That is very concerning because this is not a business. We are here. We're working with children. We're not creating products. We're developing future adults. We're working with human beings, and so that's what we have to really stop and think about what the end product is. It's not profit at all.
No, it is not, and it's also not, if I may, political influence. Okay, that's a bad thing, and I'm thinking of just what's going on, and I know what's going on at the University of Pennsylvania. Okay, there's a person who graduated there who's now a billionaire who's a very conservative man. Okay, he's very interested in conservative politics, and he's using his billions, okay, to push this conservative agenda. Okay. At the University of Pennsylvania, which is creating an uproar, and it's the same thing you're talking about, okay? Follow the money, okay? As opposed to follow the fairness, follow what everybody wants, et cetera, okay? And when money talks into education, we've got – that's not used for resourcing the kids, okay? We've got problems when it's used for a political agenda. It's really, really bad. You know, you two are just amazing. You're wonderful. Wonderful educators, and we're so lucky to have you there, and I hope you stay forever, okay? Make your lives longer with some injection so you live to 175.
Drink from the fountain of youth.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Ponce de Leon. I appreciate it.
But you know
that.
What?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Our students keep us young. Our students keep us young.
That's great. That is... Wow. It's Benjamin, ladies and gentlemen, Benjamin Button. They're getting younger by the minute. Okay, what can I tell you? Carol, you're amazing. Kimberly, you're amazing. You both deserve this award. And I'm so glad we have you in public education. And just keep up the good work. Keep spreading the good word. And if we have more like you, we're on our way to good stuff. Ladies, thank you both so very much
thank
for this.
Thank you so much.
And
thank
congratulations.
You,
congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
And thank you to Horace Mann and to NEA also for this. It's
absolutely.
Quite an honor.
That foundation is amazing. It really is. And by the way, I just want to say this again. You are two of the five winners. I don't know who the other ones were, but congratulations to them. Okay? They deserve it, too. And we got you guys here. If you're an example of them, they're pretty darn good is all I can say. Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. Thank you,
Larry. All right. Take care.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Wow. There you go. Great teachers. What can I tell you? They make for great humans. Woo. There we go. Okay. That's the NEA Foundation's 2024 Horace Mann Award for Teaching Excellence winners, two of the five. And that's Kimberly Johnson from Auburn Junior High in Auburn, Alabama, and Carol Piero Bonhoeffer in Indianapolis at Fox Hill Elementary School. Great show. Thank you, ladies. Thank you, Elizabeth, who helped me put this show together. And congrats to NEA Foundation for doing this. We're going to archive at ace-ed.org. Thanks a million for listening. Have a great day.